welcome back to It's an Inside Job podcast. I'm your host, Jason Lim. Now, this podcast is dedicated to helping you to help yourself and others to become more mentally and emotionally resilient so you can be better at bouncing back from life's inevitable setbacks. Now, on It's an Inside Job, we decode the science and stories of resilience into practical advice, skills, and strategies that you can use to impact your life and those around you. Now, with that said, let's slip into the stream. Well, welcome back, dear listener, to the top of a new week and a fresh new episode. This week, I want to kick off a new series. Now, as all of you know, the primary focus of this podcast is to build mental and emotional resilience. And what I wanted to do, I've been talking to a number of different professionals from all different sectors as you've joined me over the last year. But now, in this series, I want to talk to Ukrainians. I want to understand and explore resilience in an ongoing developing situation. I want to hear the Ukrainian stories of how they find fortitude and tenacity and resilience, and to understand what they are doing to find their ways through this chaos that the Russian government has forced upon them. What the Russian government calls a special military operation, but let's call it for what it is. It's an invasion. It's an unnecessary war. For those of us who are not Ukrainian, this bloody war started the morning of February 24th, 2022. In the time of recording, this is 10 months ago. But if you ask the Ukrainians, this war actually started February 20th, 2014, when Russia annexed Crimea. And I think an important caveat here is that I speak of the Russian government and not the Russian people. And I think it is very important to make that distinction. And so to kick off this series, I'm very privileged to be joined by Sofia Opatska. She's the founding dean of business school at the Ukrainian Catholic University, which she had led since 2008. Now, in those years, the business school became well known in Ukraine and received international accreditation. Every year, the school receives more than 200 executives, managers, and entrepreneurs who study at five different master's programs, including an executive MBA. And more than 3,000 participants take executive education courses at UCU Business School. Now, since 2016, Sophie has been the vice rector at the university and is now responsible for strategic development of the university. She also has broad international experience in Europe, North America, and Asia. And through the last 6 months, she's spent abroad not by her choice, but because of the Russian government's invasion of her homeland. And so Sophia and her two children have spent time in Denmark, when Sophia hosted as a research fellow at the Aarhus University. Now she's back in Ukraine, fighting battles on the educational front by her work every day. And so my conversation with Sophia, it was kind of surreal for me because I'm sitting safely here in Oslo, Norway, and Sophia is sitting in eastern Ukraine, where at any point there could be a rocket attack or air raid sirens or blackout or brownouts. And so I am very appreciative of Sophia spending some time with me today to speak and to share her story. Anyways, folks, let's slip into the stream and meet Sophia Opatska. Well, Sophia, I was wondering, perhaps you could tell us a little about who you are and what you're about and what you do.
Well, thank you for giving me this chance to talk to you. And in last 8 or even 9 months, always when I present myself, I'm saying that I'm Ukrainian and this is my superpower. And it's probably something which is the most important about myself right now. Obviously, I have some professional experience. Obviously, I have some responsibilities in this life. I have family. I have 2 children. I work as Vice Rector for Strategic Development at the Ukrainian Catholic University. I'm also founding Dean of the Business School. And this is a very big part of what I do and where my passion is about. But I guess right now, the most important is that I'm Ukrainian and that that I'm part of the country which is not only struggling, but being very brave. And I think every single Ukrainian right now feels very, maybe not, well, inspired often, but also, you know, empowered. But by what we see, what our citizens can do, what we as a nation are doing, and how we live from day to day, and what we are trying to achieve.
And that's why I really wanted to have you on the show, Sophia, because I want to create a part of an ongoing series where I talk to Ukrainians about their ongoing experience. Because when it comes to resilience, you guys are living and learning and adapting to an ongoing situation that changes from day to day, if not week to week. And to understand and to talk to you, I think this brings a different dimension than other guests that I've had. You know, as important as their reflections are, I think your reflection and your countrymen's reflection on what resilience is can add so much to that picture, because, as I said, it's an ongoing developing situation. I was wondering, could you tell us a little about the business school, UCU Business School, and maybe where it's located in Ukraine?
Yes, of course. So we are the business school, which is 15 years old. We will be 15 years in a couple of months. So we were created in 2008, which was the wonderful year to create a business school. You started and then all the companies, the first thing which they deleted from their budget was training and development. But it's an interesting story because our business school, it's a partnership of a couple of companies. And it was, I actually came with a couple of companies to the university, which was at that time purely humanitarian university, Ukrainian Catholic University. It was actually and is right now the only university which has Catholic in its name at the whole post-Soviet territory, because obviously religion was very much persecuted in Soviet times. But what we liked about this university, it was the vision for really high quality education and quality in everything which is done here. That's one thing. Another thing, we also saw that this university sees itself global with a lot, with huge international network. And this is what we really liked. And also, you know, in recent years, it was in the beginning, it was difficult to explain how come business school be in the Ukrainian Catholic University. So it was a little bit even inconvenient to present it, you know. But right now, it represents very well our values. It always represented our values, but now they became even so much stronger. You know, we are Ukrainian. We have values of respecting human dignity. And we are a university which would like to make our students not only better professionals, but we would like to make our students better people in this life. And this is what we care about. We are situated on the west of Ukraine in Lviv. The business school is executive level business school. So to study in our business school, you need to have two things. You need to have an experience and you have to be ready to reflect on that experience, because sometimes there are people who have a great experience, but they are not ready to reflect and to rethink it. We believe that if you come to our business school, you have to be ready to do that. And it will help our participants, our students to become better, both in what they do and how they do and why they do it.
And part of that is I'd like to explore. So during this conflict, I was wondering, how are the students and the faculties coping with the conflict? Maybe you could speak a little around that.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, we were explaining quite a lot as educational institution that for us, the right word to use would be an invasion. For example, we don't use, we use the word war, but war for Ukraine started in 2014. It just that it was very located in one part of Ukraine, and at certain point it became I would say with different agreements, it became slow. So people were not paying so much attention. So it's also for us much more than a conflict. So we are using the word, you know, whenever we write something, or, you know, talk, we use the word invasion, because the country was invaded from actually three sides of the country. The territory is huge. How did we go through? Well, I mean, discussions, we had discussions in the university longer time before. We actually had some signals in autumn that something like that could come. And we had a meeting with rectors meeting in, I think, in November, where we discussed. And it was so something, you know, you could not even think about, you know, it was unimaginable for us. But still, we had, before the start of the invasion, we already had some meetings and preparations in the university. So how are we going to deal? How are we going to do that? And actually, the first time when I learned that it started, it was from my colleague, from another vice rector. He called me 5 a.m. and said it started. We had a team, a special like task force, which was got together a couple of days before. And we started to meet like every 3-4 hours.
Yes.
And think, you know, how we should operate. Because, you know, in the beginning, everything was changing every 3-4 hours. We were mm-hmm. losing some territory or something like that. Students, so some of them, actually, we were saying, if you have places where you can leave out of the city, out of bigger city, please do. It's going to be safer in the smaller cities. About 15% of our staff and our students left abroad immediately. For first 2 weeks, we didn't have classes, but students started a huge humanitarian center in the universities. And because university has a very high level of trust to the institution, people started themselves to bring us things which might be useful. So they even didn't wait till we started. Wow. They just started to bring and ask, how can we help? What do you need? So our students, they got very, very much engaged into volunteering. From the business school side, we have about 600 alumni. And yes. All of them also started to get engaged in various initiatives, because this business thinking perspective was very important. So if we talk about such situations, logistics matters, supply matters, your network matters, you know, how fast you can solve the issues matters, how quick you are. So we started to become much more than a university. We became a refugee center. We became a humanitarian hub. We became much, much more. And then in 2 weeks, we decided that it is much better if we get our students engaged not only in volunteering, because all of them mostly are there, but that we need to go back also to studies. It's also that we started to send messages to business people that if you help with volunteering, that's really important, but you have to take care of your businesses as well, because a lot of people depend on your businesses. And since we were not overtaken according to the plan in 72 hours, you know, it's going to be a long journey for us, a long, you know, difficult journey. So we need to have this capacity to run this marathon. So business front, you know, economic front is very important for the country as well. So we started, you know, to change the focus of students that they should volunteer, but they should also, their primary job is to study. And for business, the primary job is to do business and help the country in this way.
We had a pre-interview before this actual podcast, and you were talking about where you spoke to a couple of dozen of business leaders. And I'd really like to tap into that. From your perspective, could you describe a little how the business environment, whether it's organizations or business owners or business leaders, are adapting to this invasion and this ongoing conflict?
Mm-hmm. Well, there were different stages of reaction and how business had to react, because in the beginning, the highest priority for all business people was to take care of people, of employees, their families, you know. So there was a huge movement of people from east of Ukraine, from north of Ukraine, from south of Ukraine. There were huge evacuations of people, and companies participated in that. Mm-hmm. So many companies, I would say all companies, they did their best to make people safe, yes, to be in safe place. So on the, you know, Maslow pyramid, it was the basic need for everyone. It's interesting because I spoke, and one colleague from IT company, he said, you know, I always had this imagination that IT family, it's a young family of, you know, two grown ups and maybe children. But it turned out that we had to help, you know, families, we had to help grandparents, parents, cats and dogs, you know, and it was like, it was a huge movement on the first month of war. Then obviously business started to think, okay, if it's a long story, how do we sustain our operations? And definitely there is a big difference between east of Ukraine and west of Ukraine, and also area around Kyiv, because, you know, it was occupied. So whenever something was occupied, people actually thought that they have zero, that there is nothing what they have left from their business. But sometimes they found, for example, some warehouse, maybe a little bit destroyed or hardly destroyed. And they are like, okay, this is what we found, because we thought that we don't have business anymore. So there is a lot of huge changes, and a lot of business people from East had to relocate. And we know great examples of the companies which relocated to Western Ukraine, and now they are doing their production here very often, or their services providing very often. I know some examples when people are having production in Western Ukraine, but they also keep going their production in Kharkiv, for example, because they have people who are still living there, and they want to, you know, keep going there, just saying we cannot do it in three shifts. We are doing it just in one shift because we have curfew hours. So in a way, first task was to do crisis management and to adapt a little bit. And it was very short-term planning, very short-term goals, and and very short-term, I would say, solutions. But in some, a lot of businesses started to look forward and think, okay, so we had a strategy. How does our strategy look right now? How does it change? How do we, if we lost the market, how do we look into different markets? How do we diversify? What happens if, for example, in our company, 30% of our employees are now abroad suddenly? We have global company in couple of days or weeks, which we did not really plan. How do we deal with culture of the company when 30% of our employees are spread out through whole Europe or world? So businesses, I would say, have very, very deep but also interesting challenges. And I think the way how business people are looking into them, it's not with fear at all. I would say it's very much with, even in such devastating times, how do we take the opportunity? And very much with the hope that country will become much stronger after the victory.
You know, those questions that you posed, that these business leaders and business owners talked about, how can we do this? How do we move forward? How do we take care of our people? You know, a lot of those questions, for me, they talk about a business and people, just people in general, focusing on what they can do to move towards action, to move forward, and not just to sit there and stagnate. And sometimes it may not always be the right direction, but it's a direction, it's a movement forward. And that I have always found, whether it's working with trauma 20 years ago or working with corporate clients now, I see a lot of parallels what you're talking about, Sophia, because when people focus on where they can invest action and effort, create a sense of certainty, control, and to some degree feel that they have an influence and autonomy on certain levels of an outcome, they don't know what the long game is. Nobody knows what the long game is. They thought it was going to be short game, 72 hours, you know, or we're going to take over the country is what the Russians thought, but it didn't. I mean, it's protracted over 8-9 months. And so that how question is so formulaic when it comes to how to create a constructive mindset. Would you say this is part of the adaptive mindset you've seen in the Ukrainian community and within your countrymen?
Well, certainly. You know, Ukrainian businesses, they went through very many challenges in last 25, I would say 20 years, because this is pretty much the age of Ukrainian companies. The, most of them have been created about 25, 20, 15 years ago. So we actually went through crisis in 1998. Then we had the Orange Revolution of 2004, which... Well, it did not influence so much business, but business was actually also a driver of that revolution because we said that we want a democratic country where elections are democratic. Then there was 2008 crisis, financial. Then we had revolution in 2013-14 and war started. And then we had COVID. So every, you know, for Ukrainian businesses, big challenges were coming like every 3-4 years. And many business people indeed said that that because of COVID, because what they learned in COVID and how they adapted in COVID, how their teams adapted, they could be ready to adapt very, very quickly this time. So it really helped them. So this ability to change, ability to adapt, I think this is what everybody understands, that this is forever. Obviously, we would like to have a little bit more opportunity to think, you know, longer term, which even doesn't look for us in months now. You know, it's, I mean, normally business is planning for 5-10 years. In Ukraine, normally business people were planning for 2-3 years. We always had strategic plans, but it was this 2-3 year way of thinking because we knew that something might happen in 2-3 years always. Now it's actually months, but in reality, business is very much engaged in a longer term future thinking about country. So what type of country we would like to build and what type of relations should be in this country? What kind of social contracts should be in the country? Because business, it's a big player in the social contract. You know, business people take responsibility not only for better products of value created for the customers. We saw through the for last months, they take a lot of responsibility for families, for employees, for their families. So I think business in Ukraine was always very much engaged in in thinking, okay, what type of country do we want to build, and especially now. And in a way, I always say that in the first month, so much money how business donated for Ukrainian army, I think it would be very hard for the country to stand if that was not because of that contribution. Obviously, our international partners came and they started to support us. But in the very beginning, I remember those three, four first days, we actually felt very alone. And we knew that we can rely only on ourselves. And I know that so many business people, they just opened whatever they had, coffers, whatever they had, bank. They took everything they had on their bank accounts. They gave away to their employees. They gave away, they donated to the army. They literally were dressing up a lot of military people so that they could be properly dressed up to face the enemy. And I think business is very, in Ukraine, business is very mindful that that there is a lot of responsibility.
In the second part of our conversation, Sophia and I talk about how the war has made certain realities come to light. I asked her directly in the second part how we can learn from what the Ukrainians and Ukrainian businesses go through. And she named a number of things. The first was to be aware, to consider geopolitical risks. It's also to learn from experience because they reveal what is truly important to us. She talks about the values and those values that rise to the top when we are under challenge, when we are under a crisis situation. And the question is, how much do we live to those values? She also talks about the difference between short-term and long-term goals, and that maybe there needs to be a shift more towards long-term outcomes, and what it truly means to have a sustainable business model. Well, let's slip into this dream and listen to part two with Sophia. This sense of community and helping each other, is this also what fosters this ability for your society to adapt to this crazy, surreal situation?
I think yes, in many ways. And civil society is pretty strong in Ukraine. So why we had those two revolutions? Because in 2004, when we got the president who was elected, we said, okay, now you go and do your job. And then, you know, and we all went to do our jobs. And then in a couple of years, we saw that it doesn't work like that. So after 2014, we said, okay, we have the, there is a president, there is government, but there is also civil society, which is controlling the, well, which is kind of really controlling what government is doing, what president is doing, what people in power in the country are doing. And also civil society started to, I would say it's not only kind of watchdog, watching what's going on, but also, again, taking initiative and taking responsibility for the country. And I think it became a huge part of DNA of all Ukrainians. And I think this is something which makes us very different from Russia, because we're looking forward. We are thinking what type of country we want to have and what's the role of every single human being in this country. So it has to be built around human being, not around president, not around people in power who decide how it should be. And I think this is very big fundamental difference. And I also think that it's something which can be reflected in business organizations in Ukraine. Yes, there is hierarchy, but probably there is much more networking, accountability. It's something, you know, we made the research in Ukraine, our Center for Leadership, as one of the leaders' virtues, we consider accountability. And there was a moment then accountability was not very understandable by Ukrainian business leaders, because normally in the logic of post-Soviet people, accountability goes from bottom to the top, but not from the top to the bottom. So we had a lot of trainings, explanations, awareness building that it goes both ways. And I think what we see right now in Ukraine in very different dimensions, that this accountability is expected of everyone, of every citizen in the country. No matter what you do, you have to do it in the best way for the victory of the country.
It sounds like, you know, as you said, you know, 2004, 2008, then the beginning of the invasion, and then now, and then COVID, and all of this has created a sense of a learning mindset to constantly adapt and evolve to the situation. So, from a business perspective, when leaders, I mean, is this part of an ongoing conversation? That, because obviously it's hard to plan 5-10 years in the future in this invasion, in this conflict. And so long term, maybe looking at 6 to 9 months, is part of the conversation, this accountability and this adaptability, is this something that goes on quite often within the halls and conference and meeting rooms and teams meetings and such?
Well, I would say yes. We will have, just in a couple of days, we will have in the business school Alumni Leadership Day. And we have, it's an annual event, and we will have two panel discussions. One will be about how business survives in such circumstances. Another will be the role of business in the society and different examples of volunteering and help of business. So this conversation is always on the table, I would say. It's interesting because Ukrainians are very eager to learn now and to reflect. So our learning curve is very steep. we live through very many events, but they don't become learnings until we reflect on them. And I think in a way, business school becomes a place very much where we help to do it. So it's interesting because our enrollments were really good this year, both on the graduate and graduate studies. And one of the reasons why people are saying that they want to study is yes. because, well, they cannot go abroad if it's manned. They cannot go on business trip. They are, unfortunately, often their families are abroad. So they are saying, I actually want to spend this time in the best way so that I can take my competences to the next level, not only for myself, but for my business and for my country. So a lot of people are now eager to spend and contribute time on learning and training and development and studies.
From a psychological point of view, from my sort of clinical psychology background, I find that completely marvelous and brilliant and amazing, where in such crazy times where we can adapt to situations, we have this sort of desensitization with things, and then we shift focus, especially Ukrainians. Let's talk about the Ukrainians, where, you know, the people that you know and the Ukrainians in general are focusing on how can I develop, how can I grow, how can we do, how can we move forward, how can I learn? And I think that is such an encouraging mindset. It speaks volumes to humanity in itself, how we can adapt and move forward and how we can build a sense of tenacity and fortitude and a sense of resilience, Sophia. If I could just sort of try to put a cap on this, what do you think, you know, with, you know, there's a lot of people that listen to this podcast, business leaders, students, teachers, parents, and such. But from an organizational point of view, what are some things that businesses and and people around the world can learn from so far in our conversation? What are some take-home messages that we can carry with us?
Yeah, it's a great question. And there are some things on an organizational level. I think all of us should be aware that the world has changed, and it will be never so calm and quiet and in terms of planning and having time to get somewhere. You know, sometimes we have to change really, really unexpectedly. And I think both with COVID, but also invasion in Ukraine, a lot of companies globally had to change many things in how they do, how they operate, what's their business model, what are the risks. I think also companies should and organizations should really consider much more geopolitical risks. When we talk about various types of risks, you know, in International Business 101, there is such a model, PESTEL analysis, and now letter P stands for political risks. And everybody knew that, you know, and I'm sure all businesses were writing different kind of reports and analytical papers and were considering them. But unfortunately, we see in reality that it was not working because regime in Russia is not just a couple of months. It's not even a couple of years. It's there for 22 years and companies didn't take it seriously. So I would say that political risks, they are very much on the table. But it's interesting that such huge challenges, they also made companies have experiences which they would never have and which brought their teams very much together. I spoke with a couple of companies abroad who pulled out of Russia and who were very active in supporting Ukrainians yes. and as refugees, temporarily displaced people, but also their employees. And it's interesting because leaders of those companies are saying that they never had such experience in culture and it never brought so much energy to their people. I cannot say excitement because you cannot be excited about such terrible events, but spirit You know, I think it was probably the best team building for the organizations. So I would say that in such situations, we also see people what really matters to them, how true our values are. I think we can also check how true the values which companies are putting on their walls, how true they are, and how much companies are living by those values. Because it's about how we make decisions. And in last year, we had to do a lot of decisions, difficult decisions. For me, there is one more, I would say, challenge or dichotomy which exists in business is that many top managers are evaluated by shorter-term goals, though we are saying by longer-term, but in reality, they're shorter-term goals. And we see that those shorter-term goals and rewards, they actually don't allow very often business leaders to take difficult decisions. So they take easier decision for today and for tomorrow, but this decision can impact organization and people in this organization and even people in other countries in number of years, but still the decision making is much shorter term. So, because the reward is shorter term, so I think this is a huge ethical issue to be discussed. I would say on quite high level of organizations on the board level, and the more longer term thinking of decision making we can bring to our organizations, the more responsible and ethical it will be.
I just want to pause you there because I think you made so many salient, astute points. So I just like to rewind just to make sure I'm following you. One of the things you said, the first thing at the top of mind that comes to mind is this crisis, this invasion. It is forced. It has made relevant what the spirit is of an organization of people. As you said, it's not excitement, but for me, there's a sense of motivation, a hunger, a drive to build something in from the chaos, to make sense of the chaos, whether it's to build the business, to create psychological safety, to bond teams, to create a sense of community. And however that shows up in business, depending on industry. The other thing what this crisis has done has blown away any superficial values, and it has shown what values actually are able to stand the turbulence and the trauma and the storm, and that forms the foundation of the culture, whether it's a team culture, a company culture, or the community's culture. And the third thing I hear is that, you know, short-term thinking and short-term goals, they're okay, but what shows up in the end, what really matters are the long-term goals, such as social responsibility, sense of social consciousness, the sense of how to build community, whether it's the organization or internationally or for the people themselves. Are those the major three things that I've kind of understood that you said?
Yeah, you're totally right. You're totally right. And I also think I will add one more thing.
Please.
I think we also saw how many businesses don't have sustainable business model. Because, I mean, in Europe right now, a lot of businesses are struggling. Probably not only in Europe, but I know most of examples from Europe, you know, that we thought that businesses have a sustainable business model, but in reality, they were using cheap resources and putting pressure on political leaders in the countries. Mm-hmm. And it lasted, I think, for too long. And obviously now it's a little bit difficult to respond quickly. But I think if we take this as a chance to finally respond, then we will be much better in 5 and 10 years. I know now it's going to be difficult. I know for people, bills are really high, both on household level, but also on business level. But this is also a chance for us to find something more sustainable. You know, we as a country, we are fighting for a future. But I think it's also the matter that other countries and other organizations understand what kind of future they also want. And since you have a privilege of not fighting literally, yes, you can take this time. So I think it's worth spending time on these matters.
I think that's well said, and a very astute point that we can learn the lessons of what is going on right now. Otherwise, you know, we forget them. We think we're going to learn from them, but this is time for, at every level, for us to kind of take on what's going on. And even just from this conversation, Sophia, I mean, there's so much to learn from your ongoing experience as a lecturer, as a professor, as a business leader, as a mom. In this closing part of our conversation, Sophia talks about how she found personal resilience when faced with undaunting challenges, how she found a depth and a strength and a tenacity to move forward, to progress. And I asked her to break down some of her mind talk, what was going through her head. She said, well, part of it, Jason, was to feel part of the community and to understand and relate, although as dire as her situation was, that in the greater context, there were other Ukrainians which were in a much worse situation. And this naturally led her down the path to gratefulness, to appreciate what she had. Not all the things she had lost, but the things that she had, her family, her friends, her colleagues, the university, the students, her community. What have you learned about yourself through the last 8-9 months of this conflict, this invasion?
It's a difficult question, Jason, because, I mean, there is an easy answer, but I don't like it. Because I think what I learned personally is that whenever I think I'm at the limit is not there yet. More is to come. And I don't like it because I would like also to have more normal life with work-life balance, with family, not being separated for half a year because we were away. We were abroad with my children for 6 months and our family was separated and it was very difficult. There are many, many Ukrainian families which are separated. And I think it will be a huge trauma for society. Because sometimes people are saying, okay, it's better to be in Ukraine together, but then you're not sure, you know, what happens the next day or next morning or next night when the air raid siren will start and what do you have to do and how do you communicate this to your children. Some other are saying, well, it's better that children are away and that they are safe and they have safe environment. But then the family is separated. So I would say that Ukrainians are making very difficult decisions also on personal level right now, on family levels right now. There is no right decision. You know, you cannot say that this is right or this is wrong. For every family, it's different. For every city, is different. For every, I would say, community, it's different. And it's the difficulty because something what we would consider to be normal is not anymore normal in Ukraine. There is no normal in Ukraine. We're not living in normal environment. I would say that decision for parents where your children go to school, should they go abroad and be safe or be in Ukraine? You know that the main criteria for the schools are right now is the shelter big enough and good enough to have all the children. So in some Ukrainian schools, some kids are studying a couple of days at the school and then a couple of days they do it online because the school cannot have everybody in the shelter. And if you asked me a year ago, you know, when we had this rector's meeting discussing it for the first time, I would say, no, this is not going to happen to us because we are in the 21st century. So I think our minds are very much confused in a way that we don't understand how this can happen in the 21st century. How did we get there? But on the other hand, it made us on a personal level very, very resilient and not only in a way that we bounce back, but we also bounce much more forward. We do so many more things which we did not expect we could do. Maybe just to give you another example,
please,
you know, all faculty members now or teachers in the school, they have a couple of scenarios for the class because the air raid siren can go in the beginning of the class, or it can go in the middle of the class, or it can go in the end of the class, and you cannot finish it. So what do you do? How do you not lose this time? Because every time it's losing time. My colleague, she made calculations, I think in May, how much time Ukrainians lost for the economy, how much was lost for the economy just because Ukrainians were hiding in the shelters. And the numbers are enormous, simply. Obviously, we stopped calculating that long time ago. But also, our lives are very disrupted. It can be disrupted that electricity goes down. And for example, you have a meeting and then the meeting cannot happen. So we are lucky with you that we can talk without interruptions. But at the same time, you are thinking, okay, but if this is how it goes now, I should adapt. There is no other way. Otherwise, your mind can blow. Mm-hmm. And it's very important that we also show an example to our children that mm-hmm. they still feel normality, that this feeling of safety, both at home and at school and mm-hmm. with their friends and in their environment, because they're our future. And as I said, we are all traumatized probably mm-hmm. just in different ways. Mm-hmm. But as a society, we will have to deal with that. Mm-hmm. So I think you can tell that better, but mm-hmm. maybe being aware, it's a first step to that we mm-hmm. realize that it's going to be a challenge for us.
Yeah, and it's just to talk about trauma, because trauma is when something super significant comes into our lives and however it shows up, and it completely flips everything upside down, inside out. And part of trauma is trying to make sense of that trauma, because when I used to work with it, you know, those people who could move on were able to make sense of the situation. They put it into the story. They made sure they weren't the victim, that they learned from the situation and that it strengthened them. I think it comes back to what you're talking about with organizations and the Ukrainian mindset itself through the history over the last 20, 25 years of all the different changes that have hit you guys, is that it's how do we learn? How do we adapt? Because one thing that really sat with me, you said, you know, sometimes I think I hit a limit, but then I find there's a deeper self. I have even more strength to push on. You didn't use those words, but that's what I understood. And you also said just now that I need to adapt. We need to adapt. Dealing with trauma, dealing with all the chaos and the challenge of this, if we look at you, Sophia, sort of mindset, I'd like to get into the nuts and bolts, the DNA of your thinking. What do you tell yourself when you feel you've hit a limit? It's like, I can't believe this is happening at this level. How, if I may ask to understand, what do you say to yourself? How do you picture things? How do you conceptualize things so you can find that deeper way of adapting and that stronger self that you thought wasn't there, but you do find it? What is it you say to yourself? Mm-hmm.
Well, there are maybe two things which help. Mm-hmm. One is being really feeling part of the bigger community. And it's university community, it's business community, but it's the whole country community. Because the country became a community. That's one thing. And I know that I always say to myself, I actually had it near my table, that... you remember in spring we had Mariupol and we had Azovstal plant where people were hiding and they there for months. And I had the saying near my table that whenever you think you're at the limits, think about people at Azovstal, and you know that you are much better than they were. And we always remember about... my friends, my colleagues who are at the front line and who don't have warm place to sleep. They are sleeping in the trenches. The winter is coming. So there are so many people who are in much worse situation than I am that I try to remind myself that I'm much better. That's one thing. Another thing which helps me also, I'm thinking about my grandparents and about history of our country, because we had such a difficult history. It's just repeating right now. And we don't agree that it repeats in the way, and we don't want to finish it the way it finished in 20th century. Because the beginning of 20th century, we had so many people who were killed so many people who were taken to gulags for their views, for freedom, just for their wish to be free. And I think we are fighting right now exactly for the same values, for the values of freedom. And they had much worse situation. They almost didn't have the state at that time. They didn't have economic backup. They didn't have, political institutions and support of the international community. We have support of international community. So I'm trying just to wrap up my long answer to your question. I'm trying to find what is best in this situation, what is good in this situation, comparing how it could be or how it was for my ancestors or for people on the east of Ukraine. So I'm always trying to find something to be grateful for. And it makes me, I think, much more appreciative of where I am and what I do and how I can still do it. And it just makes stronger.
And it really resonates with me what you said. And if I just rewind back for our listeners, and all of it speaks volumes to me. You know, first of all, as you said, is, you know, sometimes when families are torn apart, some of the men, maybe even women, are up in the front fighting and families are broken down, there can be loneliness. But it's trying to find yourself, defining yourself as part of a greater community, whether it's the faculty, whether it's the university, whether it's the business community, or whether it's the local community, the Ukrainians as a nation itself. And I think when you feel part of that, that means you're part of a bigger concept, that it's not just you alone and you're affected. When I used to work with group therapy, you know, when the whole idea of group therapy is when you bring people in, is that, you know what, this is not just happening to you. It creates a sense of normalcy that I'm not just an outlier of effect, that this is happening to everyone else. And that sense, that creates a bonding and a connection and stability for people, even though it is trauma in whatever way it forms. It allows people to adapt to that. The second thing I hear you is about shifting perspective. And it's to, as you said, it's sometimes it's the comparison of others are going through a worse situation. And that sometimes that comparison, that allows us to give us context saying, okay, it's not to minimize my bad situation, but compared to those people, I'm thankful I don't have this. A third thing I heard is that you have an anchor, you have a reminder. It may be a quote, it may be a poem, but it's something that triggers you to be present, to get outside of the rumination and the overthinking, to think, where is your mind right now, Sophia or Jason? Where are your emotions? And the fourth thing I heard is the sense of being grateful. It's understanding that, I think back to my great-grandfather, what we call the great generation in England. He's from the UK. He was born in the Second World War, went into the Great Depression, and then had to serve into the Second World War. And then we're thinking how we're suffering here in Norway or where I'm from, Canada. That's nothing compared to what my grandfather went through, or what you said is your previous Ukrainian generations, right? Or even if I compare where I'm sitting right now, my challenges and problems are nothing compared to, unfortunately, what you and yours are going through, Sophia. And so that context, those four things are very strong, powerful cognitive techniques to allow us to find greater strength and depth that we can push through whatever conflagration or confrontation we're meeting. Is that what I understand?
You're totally right. You're putting it so nicely. I'm just talking and then you put it into very clear definitions and bullet points.
Yeah, but I don't mean to minimize it, because I think what you're drawing from is so much more. Yes, maybe I put it on nice titles, but I think you speak from a depth, a sincerity, and an experience that will really resonate. I'm just putting headlines on the depth of your article, of your experience. And so I'm very appreciative of you sharing these stories. I'm also very appreciative of your time, Sophia. Was there any last advice or suggestions you could give to our listeners? And maybe even Ukrainians are listening to this.
Yeah, maybe one thing, you know, we Ukrainians, we don't want to have a monopoly for pity or for suffering. I'm actually, you know, I'm aware that there are 20, I think about 24 wars in the world right now happening. Most of them are local, but there is a lot of suffering in this world, and we definitely don't want to have this monopoly, you know, for feeling pity to us. I think what we are looking very much in the global community is to support us with our hopes, because I think we have a lot of hopes. Also, I was finishing most of my presentations in last month with a picture of small newborn child, and I had the number of how many children were born in Ukraine in those months. I don't have the updated number, so I cannot tell it, but all those children who were born during the war already, they give us a lot of hope. And we know that what we are doing this for not just for Ukraine, but we are doing it for the truth and for values which should prevail in the whole world. If we want this world to be existing in next 50, 100 years or another 200 years, we don't know how will it go. So I would say that any support of our hopes would be very much appreciated, and we are grateful for everyone who is showing this support to us right now. Thank you.
Well said, Sophia. I will make sure I get this conversation out to as many people as I can, and hopefully they continue the conversation that we've had today.
Thank you very much, Jason.
Yeah, thanks very much, Sophia. It's still, when I'm sitting here in Oslo and you're sitting there in Ukraine, it's still surreal for me that we're connecting and then we're having like a conversation, but we're sitting in two different worlds. But thank you again for your time, Sophia. I'd like to connect with you a little later in 2023 and see how things are going, if you have the opportunity.
Of course. And after we win, I think Ukraine will be a great place of destination for many, many people to come and see how this country really looks like. So I hope we will have a lot of people coming to Ukraine.
Thank you for that, Sophia. I wish you, your family, your community, the university, the students, all the best. Thanks, Sophia. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Well, folks, that was Sophia Opatska. She's the Vice Rector at the Ukrainian Catholic University and Business School. Thank you again for sharing your story. I think one thing Sophia mentioned that I think is very important to restate is that the Ukrainians don't have a monopoly on the suffering of warfare and their sense of resilience. She spoke about 24 other conflagrations that are happening around the world. Well, as I said at the top of the show, this is the first interview of the new series where I will be talking to Ukrainians about their ongoing experience and how they find resilience. And so we will continue this series at the top of the new year in 2023. But for now, folks, you can find all of Sophia's contact information in the show notes, and please reach out to me if you have any questions. Well, that brings us to a tail end of another episode. As usual, my call to action to you, if you can, is to please share, recommend, subscribe, and tell two friends, two colleagues about this show that you think could benefit from it. But until next week, keep well, keep strong, and we'll speak soon.